Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right.
Whatever, are you on the stairs somewhere hiding?
No, I am upstairs on the third floor trying to make the best thing of this corona isolation.
Okay.
Okay. So I have you on speakerphone on the mic while I am on the other one so that I can officially say thank you for allowing me, Bintu Kuyate, to interview you today, this March 30th, Monday, March 30th, 2020, at 2:45 p.m. for the Beauty Beneath the Bright Project, which is a project of the Greater Baltimore Cultural Alliance's Urban Arts Leadership Program under the direction of Kabudia Janku, sponsored by the National Endowment for the Arts and partnered with Library of Congress, Smithsonian Center for Folklife and Cultural Heritage. And the purpose again for this project is to take note of some of the history and culture of Baltimore City and the Pennsylvania Avenue corridor prior to 1968, and some of the changes that have happened since the incident where Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated and how it affected the Baltimore and its blight in current day. So, taking note of some of the beauty of Baltimore back then, and to ask you about some of your memories and some of your experiences as a youngster in the Pennsylvania Avenue, West Baltimore area. But before we do that, I want to make sure, do I have permission to interview you?
You do.
Okay. And if you are comfortable in the space that you're in, because we are being recorded with sensitive microphones, just want to remind you. And I would love for you to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay, my name is Latasha Collins Fati, and I lived in Baltimore as a child, and after coming to this country from Germany, I lived in Baltimore up until maybe about 82, and then I lived there again. I went back there to school in 1991. So, as far as Pennsylvania Avenue, I can remember Pennsylvania Avenue when they were, I guess they were reconstructing it. So I want to say that was probably about maybe 79. Went around there, 79, maybe 1980, somewhere between, I would say somewhere between 78 and 80. And they were reconstructing the roads. There was always a lot of construction in that area. But there were shops in that area. And one of the shops in particular was a shop called Shane. And it was a shoe store. And I can remember going down there. It always seemed like a spectacular event because it was so noisy and there were cars there, and the parts of the road were covered by wood because they were doing construction there. So it was always cranes and it's a lot of construction down there. But I remember we would deal with the traffic and the parking issue, and we would find a parking space, and my mom would take my hand and we would go across the street from one side of the main avenue to the other to get school shoes or Easter shoes. There was also a market there. I think it was Pennsylvania Avenue Market. And later on, I remember going there, but that wasn't the same period. But I do remember going there later on to get different things. There were a lot of markets in Baltimore, and there was a well-known Pennsylvania market down there that you, where you could buy meats and cakes for birthdays. You can buy a chicken box or a shrimp basket with potatoes, Baltimore's famous potato wedges. Before that, I knew that my grandmother lived there. So much of my grandmother's early life was spent there. So I heard, she was always telling me stories about living on Pennsylvania Avenue at a time, and she actually loved Pennsylvania Avenue. She loved that there was always something going on. There was always sights to see. So I've heard countless stories from her, in addition to actually experiencing Pennsylvania Avenue for myself. Now, when I moved back again, back in 1991, I believe, when I was there going to school, I used to frequent that area a lot because there was a library down there. And I really liked going to that library right there. I frequent it because the library next to the health department, if I'm not mistaken, or somewhere in that area over there. Those are some of my memories of Pennsylvania Avenue.
Okay. Can you share with us your lineage and how you said you were born in Germany, but then you're in Baltimore. How did you come about and how did your transitions come about?
Because I was in my parents were in the military. My father was in the military. So my mother moved from Baltimore City to Frankfurt, Germany, which is where I was born. But I also come from four generations of educators on my mother's side. So they were four generations of Baltimore City public school educators with, I believe it was one of my great grandmothers taught in a one-room schoolhouse. I can remember seeing pictures of her, of them, her and her classroom with children of different ages.
What's her name?
I don't remember which, I don't know if that was Grandma Rachel. It was either Grandma Rachel Ozell or her mom. If it was her mom, I don't remember. But I do remember seeing pictures of them in a one-room schoolhouse that was over top of the piano. It was either Grandma Rachel Ozell or it was her actual mom. My grandmother could probably elaborate on that.
Okay. Can you give us the other names inside of your maternal line, since you mentioned that you have all these, this Baltimore legacy and this teaching legacy?
Okay. So my grandmother, my mother's mother, was Peggy S. Jackson. And she grew up, or the early part of her life was in Pennsylvania Avenue. That's Peggy Jackson. And she was a Baltimore City public school educator from Carver to Mary Rodman to Northern Forest Park. And my great-grandmother, Myrtle Roselle, she was a teacher as well. I don't remember what school she was at. But
can you
I know
say her name
pretty
one
much
time?
Until, I think, 82 or 83, maybe later, she retired from Baltimore City Public Schools. And then we had Grandma Rachel and my Grandma Rachel, and then there was also her daughter, which was Zelma Ridgely, who was also a school teacher. Now, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, she, at the time, she and I believe was it my other grandmother and aunt. I can remember them going back and forth to New York. I can remember hearing stories about them going back and forth to New York to get their master's degree. But at that time, Black people were not, there weren't very many schools for Black women, Black people, particularly Black women, to go to. So they took the train each weekend or the bus each weekend, train or bus, to go to New York so they could attain their master's degree in education. And I taught school for a while, and my mother married a teacher.
And your mother, was she also a teacher?
No, my mom didn't teach.
Okay.
She said, you know what, I think that like my mom, she used to substitute teach when I was little.
Mm-hmm.
But she never really was in the class full time.
Okay. And who is your mom?
My mom is LaFon Cherie Jackson Collins King.
Thank you for sharing. All right.
So you have and this. She also went to Douglas. They all went to Douglas.
All of your mom, your grandmother, and your great grandmother?
My mother, grandmother, great grandmother, all went to Douglas.
Wow. And then you did your high schooling in Germany at that time?
No, I did my high schooling in Prince George's County. Oh. I went to school in Baltimore. I went to Garrison. And then later on, we moved over to Prince George's County. So I went to school there.
Okay. About some of the stories, do you recall one or two of the stories that your grandmother told you about growing up on Pennsylvania Avenue, or has she ever told you about seeing a change happen towards the late 60s?
My grandmother talked about, I remember hearing her talk about riots, but oddly enough, my grandmother's memories of Pennsylvania Avenue does not include segregation. So I'm not too sure but how that happened, but I know they often talk to us about how they didn't really experience segregation and what was going on during that time in that area, because she said it was relatively friendly and everybody knew each other. Now, she did say that, during that time there was a lot of numbers running and things like that that were kind of synonymous with that particular era. But I've talked to her multiple times about that in that area, race relations in that area, and she doesn't seem to have any real stories about using separate water fountains and things. She said that there were other areas, but that Pennsylvania Avenue was not really one that she could recall being like that. She talked about how there were always a lot of people on Pennsylvania Avenue, and so she, they people watched a lot. Mm-hmm. And she often talked about, basically how everybody knew each other and walking up and down the street and how they were, put on their best clothes just to, go out on the street. Mm-hmm. Particularly that avenue. So I hear she tells me all kinds of stories. She tells me stories about, looking at people out the window and sitting, apparently she spent quite a bit of her time sitting at that window, people watching, mm-hmm. when she was a child.
And where did your grandmother live on Pennsylvania Avenue?
Now, that part, I'm not sure, because that was way, way before my time. Mm-hmm. But I want to say it was somewhere down there near Upton, somewhere down there. It wasn't far from the market.
Okay. And did any other members of your family have any jobs that stood out that incorporated their that showed their connection to the community? I know you said that you had many women who have a legacy of being teachers. Are there any other members of your family that had other occupations that permeated the community likewise?
I'm not really sure, because like I said, most of them were educators. I can't really recall offhand what other types of jobs people did. I think someone worked for, I want to say maybe one of my grandfathers worked for Bethlehem Steel, but mm-hmm. I don't really recall anything. Mostly, in my family, was mostly educated.
Okay. And with the education, I know you say your grandmother has been a teacher, and she's also been a vice principal and a principal. Have there always been, can you call for the women in your family their area of expertise when it came to education? Were any of them science teachers, math and English, general studies, social studies? Anybody have anything in particular that they can?
My grandmother, Peggy Jackson, was social studies and civics.
Mm-hmm. And has
she
that any of?
Mm-hmm.
No, I continue.
So she was social studies and civics, but I do, like my grandmother was very big on Black people knowing who they were, knowing their lineages, knowing their strengths, knowing history. So she was a very, very hands-on teacher. When it came to social studies, I can remember my grandmother dressed, if they were covering a particular country, then she typically was going to dress the part of that country. They were going to eat the food from that country. She was a very hands-on teacher. Now, her mother, which was Myrtle Lavelle, she was an elementary teacher, but I can remember that her strong areas were mathematics and English. So, at that level, they taught all subjects.
Okay. has the legacy of your family as teachers and as Baltimoreans had an impact on how you live your life now?
I think it does. I think it does because my grandmother and my grandfather, they were very well known in the city, and they did a lot to really help our community, but to help our children in particular, and never giving up on our children. And I have that same level of passion when it comes to our children. I really, really want them to reach their full potential, and I think we have to help them to reach it by any means necessary. So when it comes to that, for sure, their love and passion for children's education extended to me, and the passion for reading and learning and researching and just getting as much information and disseminating it to others definitely extended onto me.
Who was your grandfather?
Who was he, or what was he?
Who is he?
Because you mentioned your grandfather, but we don't. William Jackson. But he worked for, I think, Bureau of Vital Statistics. But he started a youth basketball program. And I want to say he was more along Fulton Avenue, which is not far. But I know that he was very, very big on education too for children, which is why when he passed, they started a scholarship in his honor
in Baltimore.
But I remember him having, he played basketball up until he died of cancer, and I remember him having like leagues to keep people off of the street. So he was very, very well known in the city. He and my grandmother. And so much so that when he passed, the police had to come out to direct traffic because there was so many cars that, you know, people thought that it was some kind of politician or somebody that had passed.
That's beautiful. The scholarship that they started, was it for the basketball league that he was directing, or was it an educational one for the school, or primary, pre-primary, secondary, college?
I don't remember, because the scholarship fund was started after he passed in his honor. I can just remember going to a banquet and they started that. So I don't really have a whole lot of information, mm-hmm. because that was something that his friend had actually started and continues to handle.
Okay.
But I do know that he had a leak, and he was very, very big on our children becoming educated because he himself didn't go to college and he wanted to. So it was very important that his children, his grandchildren, and other children.
Do you know the name of the league or the teams that he sponsored as he was directing and coaching?
I don't right offhand. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really into sports then. I would have to ask family members. And for some reason, I feel like one of them is somewhere in my head, but it escapes me because I can kind of remember jerseys and seeing the writing on something.
Do you come from a large family, and do any of them still live in Baltimore?
I do come from, it's a large family. It's a large family. There's a lot of extension still, but it's a large family, I would say. Actually, I do. My grandmother now lives in Pikeville, so she's no longer in the city. But I still have multiple family members that are along Fulton Avenue. I think they're closer to East Baltimore. And we still have family that lives in Baltimore. We do. We have one family home off of Longwood and Glens Falls. And there's another one I think near Park Heights. So yeah, there's still family there. Cousins, uncle, great aunt. So my grandmother was extremely committed to the students in Baltimore City, so she would likely never leave Baltimore again. She did leave for a while to go to Russia, and she left again to go. She lived in Atlanta first for a while, and then she left to go to Russia for a while. I'm not sure how long, but I remember her being there when I was little, and then she came back.
So does it seem like a lot of people in your family do world traveling?
I can remember them going to Israel. I can remember my grandmother being in Russia, Nova Scotia. I think she was in Peru. Yeah, I would say they've done their share travel.
Being a legacy of Baltimore, have there been any Baltimorean traditions or customs, foods that you can recall having been passed on or celebrated within your family?
Absolutely. Crab cakes.
Crab cakes.
Crab cakes. Yeah, our family is known for making some of the best crab cakes and soft shell crabs. Definitely when it comes to food, the family is Baltimore. Baltimore, through and through. Mm-hmm. With every Friday, we had to have fried fish every Friday. So fried fish, we had cornbread, potato salad. We don't do that as much as we've all kind of changed our dietary habits. But when we still get together, you can bet that there's probably going to be soft shell crab and crab cakes. But I can remember very, very, very early on, my grandmother took us to the fish market, and there was once a big fish market downtown, and that fish market had all kinds of, you can buy anything from octopus to shark, to anything that you could imagine, they sold it there. And we would go there to get our seafood. And like I said, I think until this day, if there's some kind of family function, you can bet we're going to have crab cakes. So crab cakes was one of them. Another tradition, I'm not sure where they got that from, but it's bread pudding with hard sauce.
Bread pudding with what?
Hard sauce. It's called hard sauce. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what's in it because I've seen them kind of duplicated, but I can't tell you exactly what's in it, but it's some type of bread pudding, and then you put some type of sauce over there. I believe it may have like lemon and sugar. Mm-hmm. I know that was one that they talked about all the time, and you still sometimes see. Another one was, of course, mint tea. It's another one, and I think now when you see a lot of the carryouts, they still have that tea, and I think you put a little bit, I want to say you put a little bit of lemonade in it, and mint. We still see that one a lot for family functions. But mostly crab cakes, fried fish, had to be lake trout. No other fish. Occasionally we'd have croaker, but it was almost, and occasionally flounder, but 90% of the time it was Chesapeake lake trout. Seasoned with Old Bay and an egg and paprika. Cornmeal for the fish. Crab cake was Old Bay. Old Bay was always, you can't come to anybody's house in my family and not find Old Bay.
And you said every Friday you would have fish. Was there a significance to when you would have certain things, so the fish on Friday or any of these other specialty dishes?
I know fried fish was every Friday. I'm not too sure why, but that was what we ate every Friday. So we generally ate about 6 o'clock. And every Friday we had fried fish. And my uncle would come. This was at my great-great-grandmother's house because my parents worked at night. So we stayed there at my great-grandparents' house pretty much. I want to say we went there probably like about 5 o'clock and we stayed there until the next morning. And we did that 5 days a week except they had to work overtime. So I know every Friday it was always fried fish. Now, if there was sometimes we would have fried fish and soft shell crab and crab cake, a mixture of it. But it was only on Friday. I don't really remember eating fried fish on any other day but Friday. Sundays were always big meals after church. The food would be prepared before church, and then we'd come and eat. So we generally ate early, like 3 or 4 o'clock on Sunday. But Sundays usually was a big meal. Mm-hmm. It wasn't seafood. Another, I don't know where they got it from, but corn pudding. We see that every function, too. I just remember generations, different people in different generations, from my grandmother's generation, my mother's sister, my grandmother's, I think. I don't remember who it was, grandmother's. But my grandmother, my mom's sister, her grandmother, my grandmother's mother, they all made this corn pudding. Now, I don't know where that came from, but you still see that one again today, too. It had corn in it. I want to say eggs, sugar, some type of, I don't know, cinnamon or something in it. But we saw that every single holiday that came out.
Did your family attend one particular church as you were growing up, or...
They actually helped to establish the church with Sharon Baptist Church on Pressman and Sugar Street.
Is it Sharon Baptist Church?
Mm-hmm. And the family helped to establish that church.
Do you know if you still have family who attends that church?
We do. Mm-hmm. My grandmother's supposed to. That was the church where there was a blending, but a meshing of the families, because my maternal great grandmother, my mother's mother's mother, went there, but so did I'm not sure where she met her husband, which would be my great great grandfather. But both families went to that church, and I can remember one family had one pew and one family had the other pew, which allowed us to go back and forth between both. They had the pews. Everyone knew that that family sat there and that the other family sat there, and they were very close. Mm-hmm. The families were close, and you know, they had an excellent relationship and still do until this day. Mm-hmm. But I can remember as a child being able to go back and forth between both pews, both rows, because we have family on both.
And growing in and up with your Baltimore roots, have there been any things that you would say that you've seen that are identifiably Baltimore and somehow seem to transpose in other places?
Of course, Old Bay. Crab cake. It's definitely Baltimore. Mm-hmm. When you think about how it influenced the food. Mm-hmm. And the funny story is how I know that it was exclusive to Baltimore was because my uncle, my grandmother's brother, he moved to California before I was born, and I can remember them shipping Old Bay to them. Mm-hmm. And I can remember when people were flying out, they would bring frozen crab cakes and soft shell crabs to him. So whoever was flying out had to take it. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother would go to the post office and the box she would put Old Bay in.
Can you
eat more than anything? The food is, when you think about Baltimore, I think the food is what stands out most.
Have there been any other customs or institutions that your Baltimore family has participated in over these generations, be them cotillions or voting or anything?
I've heard them talk about cotillions, but I don't know. I can't say right offhand what organizations. I know that I have looked through a lot of memoirs and different souvenirs from the family, and I've seen all kinds of organizations. I can't remember anything offhand, but I do remember grandmother, my great-grandmother and my aunt being a part of various organizations. Now, I know that my grandmother, for sure, she's a member of ASALA. She is, I want to say that there's, I think, an ABC book club that she's a part of. She's definitely, when it comes to education, I'm sure there are multiple organizations. I can't think of anything offhand, but I know that I have seen different pendants and hats and shirts that have different organizations' names on.
And can you, since you're the one who introduced me to your grandmother, and we hope that we have the chance to interview Miss Jackson as well. Is there something else that you would like to share about her or about how her life has impacted yours, or something that you would like to share about how her life has impacted Baltimore?
I think her commitment to children and her commitment to stay there. My grandmother has watched Baltimore change drastically. She's watched Pennsylvania Avenue change. And my grandmother, if you go to the Board of Education, and anybody I would say that's over 60 years old, if you say her name, chances are they know her. Mm-hmm. She spent a lot of time on Northern Avenue fighting and advocating for our children. And even as the city became drug infested, she used to say that everybody left these children and she would not. And so she stayed. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes she stayed through the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. She has some amazing stories. I can remember taking her to Reginald Lewis when it first opened. And everything she saw on display, she could tell you a story about it. She has some of the most amazing stories. Talks about taking like the whole neighborhood to the beach. Like, all they had a family, there was a pickup truck, and she said they used to tie it all in the pickup truck, back of it, and go to the beach. And they would bring watermelon and deviled eggs and fried chicken, and they did it. Her family was so committed to helping people. At times, it endangers their own lives. That's what I can say about her, is her commitment to the city, her commitment to the people of the city. Phenomenal.
Thank you. I don't know if you would you said at times it endangered their own lives, your own family's lives, the mm-hmm. amount of commitment.
Absolutely. As things changed and crime mm-hmm. had become so prevalent. I remember one day going to a dance, and I want to say by then I was probably at my first year of college, and I can remember going to a dance at a school where my grandmother was the vice principal. But I can remember there was a shooting, and I can remember her gathering at the dance and gathering all the children. I can remember her pushing my cousins and I into the office, and she went out there to make sure that all the students were safe, but she also went outside to see who it was. She earned the nickname Action Jackson.
Action.
Just like what you saw in the movie. People used to call her Action Jackson. And she butted heads with a lot of other educators and members of the Board of Education because she was very, very vocal about injustice and what the students needed and what the teachers needed to teach the children. And my grandmother worked to develop a rapport with the people in the neighborhood. So even when she was in some of those areas with a lower socioeconomic status, she still made sure she went to the communities. My grandmother had no problem going to a student's house. And I can also remember one time her car was stolen. And her student told her where it was because it was elementary school. They loved her so much because she fought for them that she ended up with some level of respect from surrounding her school. So in a way, over time, it became, you leave her alone and we'll help her get her things to her car. But my grandmother can tell you stories of many of the neighborhood, I guess, drug dealers or hustlers, if you will, like helping her do things for the students, helping her to bring in bags and protecting them so that they could be there at night to make sure that grades got in and things like that. She developed a rapport with the community. And she believed in reaching out to the community, and she didn't care what your background was. Never afraid of anything. One of her students was the founder of Sankofa.
Of Sankofa, the museum?
Dance company in Baltimore?
Mama Kabibi?
Uh-huh. But it was Mama Kabibi, and she can tell you that. But she always, that's my student. Two people, I believe. So it was Mama Kabibi, and I'm not sure, but she can probably answer that for you. But she'll tell you that that was her student.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think it was a student at Carver. Mm-hmm. Also, she taught night school at TCD. And she also felt like without an educational diploma, your opportunities were limited. So she taught school during the day. She taught night school at night, And here's the other kicker. She was also a bartender at, I want to say, Maceo's. And she did that because she loved people. Mm-hmm. And she loved, because she had grown up on Pennsylvania Avenue and later on moved to Lorman Street, those areas were so busy and it was always something going on that she thrived off of that. Mm-hmm. Being in areas where people, there was music and people playing cards. That was something that she's always thrived off of, being in those type of environments. So, like I said, she taught public school during the day, night school at night, and she also bartended.
And then you said you would go to her house during the week or on the weekends?
No, that was great-grandmother. So that was her mother.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough to know my great-grandmother, great-great-grandmother.
Your grandmother, your great-grandmother, and your great-great-grandmother?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep. My great-great-grandmother lived on Lorman Street.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask you to say their names again one more time just to make sure that I have it clearly, because I wouldn't want to, you know, not acknowledge them.
So my great, great grandmother was Emma Jane Atkinson. Her daughter was Myrtle Lee Atkinson herself. And her daughter was Peggy S. Jackson. And her father's mother was Rachel Rosell, and she was a teacher. And so was her daughter, Zelma Bridges. I'm not sure where she was a teacher, but she was extremely intelligent. So my grandmother's, I want to say my great-grandmother and grandmother, I believe they both graduated from college. And then my great-grandmother went to school in New York, where she obtained her master's. My grandmother, I want to say one degree was University of Maryland. She might have gotten the other one at Hopkins, but either she started, she might have started her doctorate at Hopkins. Not sure what it was. She started a degree at Hopkins, and I don't know if she finished. But I'm pretty sure she graduated from University of Maryland and college.
And your family's connection on Pennsylvania Avenue, do you know if they've ever spoke of having particular stores that they went to for certain things, whether it was they had a particular A-Rab they always patronized, or if they had to get some shoes, they only went to this store, or if it was clothing or whatever.
I don't remember the name, but it was some store that my great-grandmother went to. My great-grandmother, she not only was she a teacher, she was also a seamstress. Mm-hmm. And there was somewhere in particular, I apologize. When it comes to like that, I'm just going by like stories that I heard all my, pretty much all my life. But there definitely a particular store, and I want to say that there was a pharmacy they always went to, and she talked about the ARAB. I even remember the ARAB when they would come up the street and you would hear the horses. And they sold two things. You either got one that sold fruit, the other one sold seafood. Mm-hmm. They had scale on the back. But they knew who they bought from. They could tell you who they are. I personally can't remember any what the person's name was. It was so long ago. But I do remember somebody coming up the street when we moved over later on to Longwood, which is off of Gwynn Falls, but I know that for sure. My grandmother can tell you about the ARAB on Pennsylvania F.
All right. Is there anything else that you would like to leave us with before we come to a conclusion?
I think there's a lot of beauty in Baltimore. A lot of beauty. It's changed a lot, but there's a lot of beauty, and the happiest times of my life were spent in Baltimore. I have so many beautiful, fine memories. Baltimore, going down to the harbor when Domino's Sugar Factory was still down there, and McCormick's Spice, and it would smell, the whole downtown would smell like all spice and different kinds of spices mixed together, to riding up 83 and you would smell the vinegar from, I think, a Fleischman over there. There is a lot of beauty in Baltimore. I think good people are some of the most fearless and the most fearless and many ways resilient people you ever want to meet.
Thank you, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you so much, Miss Tasha Collins Fati. I really, really appreciate you taking out the time in your busy day to give us some part of Baltimore culture and history. Appreciate the work that you do every day in healthcare. Especially during this pandemic, so making the accommodation to even just stop the call. Appreciate the work that you do every day with the children, especially mine, who loves you so much, and the ones that you've been working with for decades, and for sustaining the legacy of your family for at least a good 5 generations of Maryland and Baltimore culture. So thank you for taking this time out today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And this has been Tukuyate again with Beauty Beneath the Blight, a project of the Urban Arts Leadership Program of Greater Baltimore Cultural Alliance, directed under the guidance of Kabibia Janku, a project funded by the National Endowment for the Arts, partnered with the Library of Congress and Smithsonian Center for Folklife and Cultural Heritage on this Monday, March 30th, 2020. And we are concluding the interview for today with Miss Tasha Collins Fati in right here in Baltimore, Edmonton Village, Whittington Road. On the 3rd floor of the humble abode of my family. Thank you.